There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in His place, back where He belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So how do we do that? How do we enter into the conversations of the day as the ambassadors of Jesus Christ? How do we speak the mind of Christ on the matters of the day? Let's face it, people don't need just another piece of our mind, but they do very much need the peace of the mind of Christ. So how do we give that to them? I'm going to talk about pie today, so you're going to want to hang around the whole show, because I'm going to talk about pie at church at the end of the hour. I'm holding off until then, but there you go. That is how you give the peace of Jesus Christ to somebody else. You serve pie at church. That's at least part of the answer to the question. All right, we invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. While you're there, sign up for the email newsletter so you don't miss stuff like pie at church. And we'll send out some information and some commentary that we don't have time to share here on the show. We'd also appreciate it if you'd go to Facebook and like us there. Let us know what you're thinking about. The easiest way to communicate with me is on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. However, you can always text me here in the studio at 877-655-6755. Again, to text me anytime, day or night, here in the studio, 877-655-6755. Now, the only time I'm probably going to answer that is during the show, but you can send me a text anytime. All right, for those of you who are in the WTLN, the Word, listening area in the greater Orlando, Florida region, the 2017 Pastors, Wives, and Ministry, Women in Ministry Appreciation Lunch is coming up on June the 16th. It's going to be at the Rosen Plaza, and we are inviting all women of faith who live in the area or who are going to be in the area on June the 16th, because actually my friend who's going lives in Atlanta, but she's a woman in ministry, and she's going to be in the Orlando area on June the 16th, so she's going. So there you go. If you're a woman in ministry, you love Jesus Christ, you're in a Bible study, get your girls together and go to this free event, totally free. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be worship. Our friend Steve Arterburn is going to be speaking. You go to this website, thewordorlando.com, thewordorlando.com, and you sign up for free. It'll be a wonderful day, June the 16th. It's an appreciation luncheon for women who love Jesus in the whole Central Florida region, and it's at the Rosen Plaza, which is a beautiful place to gather as well. That's on iDrive, in case you're wondering. All right, friends, I don't know about you, but my inbox was exploding this morning with all kinds of action alerts. Everybody wanted me to communicate with somebody who might impress upon the president to not do what I suspect he is in the Rose Garden at this very minute doing, which is withdrawing the United States of America from the Paris Climate Agreement. Okay, so the first action alert that that popped up in my email box this morning was actually from a mainline denomination, their Office of Public Witness in Washington, D.C. They want me to raise my prophetic voice. They want me to stop this disaster that is going to be that's going to happen because President Trump is going to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement. They say that is going to be disastrous for God's people and God's creation. I think that might be an overstatement, and it might certainly be an overstatement for the church to make. But they go on and they say things like, "This is urgent. It's potentially irreversible," which I think limits God's ability to pretty much do whatever he wants to do in terms of redeeming things. And then there's this paragraph. It is in keeping with our deeply held religious values that we ask Congress to put pressure on President Trump to remain a signatory to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, Paris Agreement, and to fulfill our commitments under that agreement. Now, here's the part of their action statement that I agree with. So I want to lift up that which is positive. The walk-off paragraph is this, before they tell me to call my member of Congress. The walk-off paragraph is this, and I agree with this. The need for global leadership could not be more urgent. I would also say the need for Christian leadership could not be more urgent. And since this comes from a, you know, at least a group that calls it a Christian denomination, maybe they should have thought of that, but they didn't. We believe that the United States can and must play a leadership role. I think they lose a little credibility there. They should be asserting their distinctly Christian witness in all of this. They should be laying claim to a distinctly Christian witness, not just a denomination that is seeking here to get its membership to call members of Congress to make the president do something that that at least they have decided in Louisville, Kentucky, they want to see done or not done. So anyway, it is an issue. I don't deny that. I don't deny climate change. I don't deny that climate change is an issue. I don't deny that those who are most adversely affected by climate change are probably in the poorest position to do anything about it. Unless God is a part of the answer to the question. Unless God is a part of the formula that you're working with. Because here's the deal. Even if the United States of America remains a signatory in this climate change agreement, but then doesn't do what we've said on paper we're going to do, then what difference does it make, to quote someone in our sort of recent history who made such a statement? And if we remain a signatory and we don't do what we said we were going to do, or if we take our signature off of it and then we go ahead and do what we have committed to doing. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, which one actually does the will of the Father? The one who says they're going to do something and then doesn't do it? Or the one who says they're not going to do it and then ends up doing it anyway? Because ultimately, the commitments made, other than the financial commitment, which is $3 billion, other than the financial commitment which the United States government made, every other commitment in this is a commitment that Americans themselves could keep regardless of whether or not the United States of America is a signatory on a document. So if you are a person who is compelled to uphold and advance the concerns related to the Paris Climate Change Agreement, then by God, do it. Do it. Nobody's preventing you. And if you've got an extra $3 billion laying around, kick it into the pot. Go ahead and make good on America's commitment. The United States of America, as a collective body, represented in this case by the President of the United States, who is in a position to withdraw the nation that he leads from an agreement if he so chooses to do so, he's basically saying, look, we can't afford this. He's not saying, at least I don't think, he's not saying the world doesn't have a problem. He's not saying America's not part of the problem. He is saying America cannot afford. She cannot afford right now to do what she has committed to do. So instead of remaining in ink, committed to doing something that we're not going to do, which is pony up this $3 billion, he's saying, I'm withdrawing us from the agreement. Now, that in no way, shape, or form keeps anybody who's committed to the Paris Climate Change Agreement from doing exactly what it calls for. So you, my friend, listening out there, are absolutely in a position to impact climate change. If this is a concern to you, you are absolutely in a position to do something about it. And you have a lot more power at your disposal than maybe you have thought in the past. Here's the reality. The climate has been changing since the first day following the fall. Okay? I mean, climate has been changing now since the day Adam and Eve took the proverbial bite of the apple. Things are not totally like they were in the beginning when God declared it to all be good. In the beginning, air and water quality was absolutely perfect. There were no pollutants, and therefore there was no pollution. Apparently, actually, the air was super oxygenated. So these people that are now pumping extra oxygen into water and wanting you to drink it, that's the theory going there. People who want you to lie in an oxygen, you know, tank in a chamber. Really rich people do this, by the way. They go and they get these oxygen treatments. Why is that? Well, because they're really rich. They're contributing to climate, to the decline of the climate, but they're seeking to enhance their own lives. So part of this is personal responsibility, and part of this is recognizing that rich people are not particularly interested in the concerns of poor people. And that's really the witness Christians need to have. When the brunt of climate change is being borne by the poorest people in the world, who are in the worst position to do anything about it, that is the point of moral concern for the Christian. Certainly, we are the stewards of God's good creation. Certainly, we have a responsibility of stewardship. And certainly, we are bad stewards. No question about it. When our consumerism and when our own desire to, you know, remain relatively cool on a relatively hot day, and our desire to be transported quickly across the nation and around the world in relative comfort, when that overshadows our commitment for the least of these, our brothers and sisters, whose access to clean water and clean air is tragically limited, then we got to look in the mirror and we got to have a conversation with ourselves as Christians. But that's a Christian moral conversation. So this larger conversation about whether or not we ought to be impressing upon our government to engage in a level of commitment that we, at least monetarily, can't right now afford as a nation, there you go. That's really the question, I think, that is that should be the point of argumentation for people on the policy side of things. We are human beings, and as human beings, we are ultimately responsible for some of the ways in which the climate has changed. Some. But probably not in the way that some people understand that today. Our responsibility for climate change and the changing climate runs far deeper than rising ocean temperatures, and it reaches far wider than the ozone layer. You and I actually bear the responsibility before the Lord our God for the very corruption of the good creation which He has made. The fall of man itself is what drew creation to fall. So one of the consequences of a fallen creation, one of the consequences of the fall, one of the consequences of the fact that we don't live in Eden anymore, are the weather cycles that produce violent storms. Now, we happen to be today on the first day of what is known as hurricane season. It's always curious to me that hurricanes have a season and that their season runs almost the whole year. So it's June 1st, which is today, to November the 30th. So really, shouldn't we just have like non-hurricane season? Because that's a shorter period of time, December to May. December to May, non-hurricane season. Because this whole notion that we're going to have this hurricane season that's going to run from June 1st to the end of November, that's kind of a bloated season. Not a lot of seasons run that long. Okay, so it spans summer and fall, and I would say is a consequence of the fall, in case you missed that in the lead-in. So here's what I know about hurricane season, which begins today. This is from the NOAA, the National Oceanic, unless it's in front of me, I can't remember what these stand for. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. This is your government at work supplying you with this information, and so here you go. The federal government predicts an unusually active 2017 hurricane season. Those of you in our WTLN listening area, heads up, this is for you. For the Atlantic Basin, 5 to 9 hurricanes are expected to form. 11 to 17 named tropical storms will develop in the region, which includes the Atlantic, the Caribbean, and the Gulf of Mexico. So everybody in Florida needs to have a heads up. And, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, that as actually affects more states than just Florida. I know that not everybody thinks about that, but there you go. Texas, heads up. Everybody between Texas and Florida, you know, I realize that you don't have a lot of ocean frontage, but we all remember Katrina, and we recognize that the reality of the Gulf of Mexico touches states that we don't often think of as coastal. Okay, so for those of you in Florida, it is notable to me that this marks the 25th anniversary of Hurricane Andrew. I can like hardly believe it's been that long ago, but there you go. That was in 1992, and that was 25 years ago now. All right, so from the tropics to the Arctic, we have more evidence of the ever-changing face of creation, the ever-changing face of the surface of the Earth. We have talked before about the crack in the Larsen Sea Ice Shelf. You're saying to yourself, I don't remember you talking about the Larsen Sea Ice Shelf. Well, it's been a couple of months ago. It is one of Antarctica's largest floating platforms. Whoever's calling me right now from Newark, New Jersey, I'm going to have to get back to you later. Antarctica's largest floating platforms of ice, but it is about to what's called calve, which means it's about to have a major part of itself calved off into the ocean. And actually, the part of the Larsen Sea ice shelf that's about to calve off is the size of the state of Delaware. So it's not, you know, like huge by United States terrestrial standards. But if you live in the state of Delaware and you think of your entire state being calved off into the ocean, you think to yourself, that's kind of big. So this is what they're saying about when it calves. When it breaks off into the Southern Ocean, the Larsen Sea ice shelf will lose more than 10% of its area, and it will leave the ice front at its most retreated position ever recorded, which simply means its smallest state. This event will fundamentally change the landscape of the Antarctic Peninsula in much the same way that if the state of Delaware fell off into the ocean, we'd have to redraw what the United States of America looks like. And you're saying to yourself, okay, so it's ice. So we count it as a part of the terrestrial mass of Antarctica? Yes, in fact, we do. And so because I know some of you are thinking, oh my goodness, when 10% of a giant ice shelf falls into the ocean, it is going to create a gigantic wave, and it is going to raise the level of the ocean water by some actually discernible amount, right? Okay, well, actually, no, because it's ice already. It's already water, and it's already in the ocean. It's just going to be in the ocean set free as a Delaware-size iceberg, which I have to tell you, I think is actually pretty cool. So do I recognize the concern that people have about this? Do I understand the alarm that is being raised by those who want to point to this as evidence of global warming and want to point to this as an overarching concern in the rise of temperatures in the ocean and what that means for people who live in low-lying coastal areas around the world, particularly those with, as I have mentioned before, the least resources to do anything about the climate changing around them? Yes, I understand all of those concerns. And so, as the President of the United States, here's my Christian worldview take on all of this. As the President of the United States, which I assume he is either doing right now or has just done in the Rose Garden, remove the United States from the Paris Climate Change Agreement. I want us to consider this. How might the climate change, or how might the climate be changed in an instant, in the blinking of an eye, if God's people would simply humble themselves and pray, turn from our wicked ways, and ask God to heal the land? I recognize that we don't often turn to that text and say to ourselves, this is about climate change. This is about the humility that's necessary in my life to live more simply that other people might simply live. This is about ardent prayer and humbling myself before the Lord and acknowledging that that things in the climate are so bad, the air quality is so bad, the water quality is so bad in some places that people literally cannot live. God could change it. God could change all of that in an instant. God could change all of that in a blink of an eye. And so are we even asking for that? Is that even a part of the plan that was put together by these 196 countries that spent months and months hashing out together what would be in this Paris climate change agreement? It's not even in there. You say to yourself, well, that's not a shock. It's not in there. I'm concerned that it's not in there. It might be a totally unrealistic expectation that it would be in there. But as a Christian, if we're not even including the possibility that maybe as people in the world globally, it's time to bow down to the Creator instead of worshiping the creation, then we're on the wrong side of the conversation. Now, I'm not saying we're not called to be good stewards of the creation over which God has set us as his managers. What I am saying is, if you forget that it's God's creation, and you forget that he has made it, and you forget that he is going to remake it, and you forget that the reason that it's such a mess is that we are fallen, and we are sinful, and we are broken, and that the brokenness of the world is absolutely a reflection of the brokenness of humanity, then you cannot possibly understand what it's going to look like to get to a different place in this conversation. Nowhere in the Paris Climate Change Agreement is God's power to redeem taken into consideration. It is as if God does not exist. and that humanity, or at least the parts of humanity represented in the agreement, are holding the world in the palm of their collective hand. That is the hubris, that is hubris of the worst sort. God could restore the climate to equilibrium in an instant. But I think there are very few people asking him to do so. I think there are very few people, including God, in this conversation in a substantive way. Of all the varied ambassadors around the table in Paris, it seems that no one was able to bring God into that conversation in such a substantive way that God actually made it into the plan for how this was going to be reversed. I'm not saying that there weren't people in the room who were seeking to bring God's witness to bear. I am suggesting that collectively, this is an agreement based on scientism and naturalism and the understanding that the system is closed, and that if anything's going to get better, it's going to be because we people made it better. Taking God completely out of the conversation and rejecting his redemptive plan. Now, whose fault is that? Whose fault is it that secular humanists at a negotiating table came up with a secular plan? That's not their fault. The ambassadors who bear the weight of bringing God's kingdom position to bear on this and every other conversation are those who know God, those in whom the Spirit of God is actively dwelling, those who actually believe that God has the power to redeem. Why? Because they have experienced in their own lives God's redemptive power. So that's where you and I have a story to tell. That's where you and I have a role to play in these conversations. So I don't know about you. I will just admit that while the Paris climate change meeting was taking place, I was probably not ardently praying that God would get his witness in the room. And as the president removes the United States from the agreement today, I think we have to be praying. We have to be praying that God would get into the conversations in our own communities, where we've got generations of people who have been educated to believe that the redemption of the earth is only possible if humanity changes things. All right, friends, if you've read the Bible all the way to the end, then you actually know God has a redemptive plan for creation itself. You know that the earth is groaning with eager longing for man's redemption because creation is suffering the effects of the fall right along with each and every one of us. God makes clear in Revelation that the day is coming when he will restore all things to their former glory. There's going to be a new heaven on a new earth. Everything old will pass away. Everything will become new. Now, that does not mean we just let the earth go to hell in the meantime. All right? We are stewards of the earth. We are laborers left to tend the Father's vineyard. But we are merely stewards, and we are merely laborers. And we can't reverse the curse of sin for the earth any more than we can reverse the curse of sin for ourselves. Creation itself has a Savior, and it isn't us. And so in reliance upon him, we must do what we can now, and we must do what we can for others who are living in the consequence of generational sin related to these issues. All right, friends, the creation itself is flawed, and we all know it. But it's not flawed because God created it in a flawed way. It was perfect. It was good. And at the fall of man, because of sin, creation started groaning as well. So when you see those storms rising on the horizon, and when you read about what's happening to people around the world as a consequence of what some will point to as climate change and what the rest of us should simply point to as the consequence of sin, we bear a responsibility to do for the least of these, our brothers and sisters, what they cannot do for themselves. And we bear the responsibility to change our own behavior to live more simply that others might simply live. And we bear the responsibility to make good on commitments that we have made, regardless of whether or not the signature of our country is still on a document. You can still do in your own life every day what's within your power to do. And that starts with praying. Praying that God would bring about the renewal of creation in particular places, in particular ways that are most grievously needed for the people in those locations. And then, yeah, I think that through technology, and I think that through better ways of doing things, we should find a way. We should find lots of creative ways to, again, live more simply, that other people might actually flourish, that they might live in an environment with clean water and clean air and the dignity of the work of a day. All right, friends, we got to take a break. Visit me online, reconnectwithcarmen.com during the break, and I'll be right back. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect. We're walking in the light. We are seeking to put God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we're talking about what people are talking about, and that means that this week, one of the things we're talking about is summer vacation. We're equipping you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world, and today we're going to invite you to get out there and be a little adventuresome in this glorious creation that God has made. Hey, we invite you to connect with us online. Our website is reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can always let me know what you're thinking about on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. So while you're at the website, sign up for our email list. You'll receive timely equipping resources that are designed to help you reconnect the eternal with the everyday and get God back into the conversations of the day in ways that honor Jesus. Again, the website is reconnectwithcarmen.com. I'm going to lead off this conversation in this half hour with a quote from the book by Roger Thompson. The quote is this: "We search mountaintops and valleys, deserts and oceans, hoping sunrises and long views through the canyons will help us discover who we are or what we still want to be. The language of our hearts reflects that of creation because in both are fingerprints of God. The author is Roger Thompson. He's an entrepreneur and an adventurer. He's the author of We Stood Upon Stars, Finding God in Lost Places. You can check it out at rogerwthompson.com. Roger, welcome to The Reconnect.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So this is a very accessible read. This is a book that I think is especially encouraging to men, but it's a delight. It's a delight to the reader. It's a lot of short stories put together, which also makes it very accessible and conversational. I think ultimately it's a book about relationships. So if I were to describe your book as a book about relationships, how would you answer that?
I'm actually glad you said that, because when I started off to write this book, I very much had men in mind. That's why the chapters are so short, and there's a map to begin every chapter. But I thought, how's a man ever going to read a book about relationships? And so I wrote, on the surface, a travel book, but intentionally, it's really about those we travel with. And so I'd say relationships are at the core of what this book is about. And so I'm glad to hear you actually pick that up, because most people don't.
So just to let my readers in on this, and Roger, you may not know this, but women actually buy the majority of books, even books that men read. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking to our audience today, we're not only going to seek to spark the interest of guys, because I think you're exactly right. For guys out there, you know, I mean, I just want to go ahead and say this book is for you. But to the women who are listening, this is a book that would be a joy to help you engage in a conversation with a man in your life. And if you're a single mom of a boy, I think this book is a particularly important resource for you. They're in here. You've got conversations about relationships with nature or friends, relationships with your spouse or your kids, relationships with your hometown, and yes, your relationship with God. So talk with us about how it is that experiences out there in the big wide world create possibilities and opportunities for conversations that are just harder to have anywhere else.
Well, sure. Yeah, you mentioned the single mothers, and I was raised by a single mother. I lost my dad at a young age, and I had all these big questions in my life that seemed hard to answer. And what I found consistently as a kid is the more I went into nature, I just felt like I felt a presence there. It took me a little while to understand what that presence really was, and it was God kind of speaking to me. But a lot of the lessons I learned in my life happened while surfing or fishing or being kind of out there in nature. And so as I kind of developed that sense in me, what I discovered as I kind of got older and older is God continued to speak through his creation to me, not in a weird way, but just in a way that kind of got my attention, so that whenever I was dealing with the issue of fatherhood, I would go to the mountains and I would pray and I could hear God's voice there. If I was dealing with something in my marriage, I could bring that to God in these places, and there just wasn't the distractions, there wasn't the other things, you know, going for my attention. I really could just clearly hear from God in those places. And so these places have all been kind of sacred. They've all created sacred moments in my life where I feel like I've been in communion with God kind of in his creation.
So you write, there is a higher purpose in adventure. What's the higher purpose?
Well, I think that the higher purpose, you know, in that particular section, I was writing somewhat about kids. It was a place where I wrote about Glacier National Park, where I took my boys there. And boys in particular, but I think this is true of girls as well, there's something about adventure that helps them realize what all they're capable of. It tells them that they have to rely on some things bigger than themselves. And those are all key things, obviously, in the rest of our life as well. But I think adventure is a place where that becomes the first encounter a lot of kids will have with these big, important realities, you know, that it's there's something bigger than them at work in those adventures, and they need to lean into that.
So it occurred to me when I was thinking about this conversation with you that there's just a lot of places in Scripture where when Jesus is with his disciples, you know, there's an adventure right on the horizon. So, you know, they go for a walk, they go fishing. In one occasion, they end up going swimming, which was kind of unintentional. They, I mean, you know, there's certainly a lot of campouts. We don't actually read it that way, but there's certainly, you know, for a guy who never owned a home, and spent a lot of nights, what we would consider couch surfing, you know, we also assume Jesus spent a lot of nights, sleeping in places like, the Garden of Gethsemane. And so, I think there's a natural, you draw people naturally in to spiritual conversations that for students of the Bible will be meaningful in ways that that a straightforward Bible study of those same texts would never, they would never get it. And I think that in reading your book, for a person who has some experience with the Bible, there are all of these aha moments along the way where you're like, oh, that sounds like this time that this happened to so-and-so in the Bible. And so I just want to encourage you that I really, I found those places in particular heartwarming. It was delightful. And let me remind our listeners, I'm talking to Roger Thompson. The book we're discussing is We Stood Upon Stars, Finding God in Lost Places. You can check it all out at RogerWThompson.com. So, Roger, what do you think, why do you think we're so drawn to wild places?
Well, you know, I think that there's something in our making that we're drawn to. There's something about us that I know for an adventure, it always feels like there's something more kind of out there. And I think that's built into our DNA. I think God's drawing us into these places where we can discover the much bigger sense of who He is. You know, so I think there's that, and I also think that there's, particularly for men in this day and age, they're so hemmed in by work and even sometimes church and these places. They don't get that sense of their, you know, adrenaline and some of these things that men kind of crave. And I think adventures kind of draw us out into those things as well, and it's an important part of kind of our own development as men.
So I want you to speak for a moment to wives in particular out there. I happen to be very privileged to be the only woman in a group of men that meets once a month, and I don't really know how and why I have that privilege. But when they talk about some of the things that they talk about, I like want to call up their wife and say, which of course I'm not going to do, but I want to say, okay, you really do need to let him go on that fishing trip or on that hunting trip. You need to allow him this time and this space to, you know, go to Colorado and get an elk. Like, this is what he wants to do. He's got a passion in his heart for it. He feels, you know, he feels like a slave right now to this hamster wheel that he's on in this very suburban neighborhood. Obviously I can't do that, but am I on the right track when I'm desiring to make that appeal for wives to support this? It's not that they want to wander away from us. It's not that they want to be have time away from us. It's that they want to get out there in the wild place where they can be a man and reconnect with the Creator.
Well, that's absolutely right. You're on the exact right track, and I'm glad to hear you pushing that direction. Yeah, I've talked to many wives of my buddies and have asked them, almost pleaded with them at times, just let your husband just go on a fishing trip with me. I promise he's going to come back a better man. And every time we come back, the wives are very pleased at the change that happens in their husband. And it's just because when we get out there, we can be more of who we're created to be. And there's also something special that happens. You mentioned, you know, Jesus and the disciples out in the wilderness. There's something special that happens over a campfire. I call campfires a truth serum, where we just kind of, our walls break down and we start opening up to one another. And some of my best conversations with buddies about some of the hardest things in our lives have happened over a campfire, where that just couldn't have happened, I think, in any other environment. We needed to be out there for that to happen. So I would very much encourage women to, you know, let your husbands go, and also encourage your husband to take their kids too. I take my boys on these trips, and it does something in my connection with them as well. You know, I think I'm probably a little bit of a better father in those wilder places than I can be in some suburban places, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And just being, you know, out there off the grid, thinking about different things and thinking about time differently. I just think that all of those things are so precious. Hey, friends, as we enter into summer, this is actually a great read for you. The book is We Stood Upon Stars, Finding God in Lost Places. The author is Roger W. Thompson. You can check it out at RogerWThompson.com. He's also got a Facebook page, which is just Author Roger W. Thompson. which means we're anticipating future books. Because if you have an author page, that means, you know, there's going to be more books. So we're excited about that, because you really are gifted with words. So I want to read a sentence to our listeners. You say this: "I now stand with my boys in the water, hoping that memories of mountains will do the thing I am not wise enough nor strong enough to do, to shape them into men." So I just want to just speak a word of encouragement to you. When C.S. Lewis talks about living in a time and educating children and bringing them up to be men without chests, like that we're going to have this whole world full of people who really have no capacity to engage in meaningful ways with God, with one another, with the creation itself. You are actually providing people a very practical guidebook to begin entering back into that conversation in a substantive way. So I'm going to really encourage you to keep writing. You have a gift of writing. You know how to put words together in beautiful ways. And so let that be of an encouragement to you today as well.
Thank you so much for that.
As we head into summer, let me ask you this. If you could encourage the people who are listening to do one thing with the summer that lies ahead, what's one thing you would encourage them to do?
I would say, obviously, this won't come as a surprise, is get outdoors. Take your kids, take your wife, you know, or go up with your buddies, but get out and experience God in a fresh way. And I was going to mention, too, on my website, for anyone who's interested, I have a free camping guide there for those who are maybe a little intimidated about getting outside, or this isn't a part of their normal routine. I've done a kind of a beginner's camp guide to help people understand some of the fundamentals about camping, and that could help give them a little bit more of what they need to get going. But I'd say definitely get out there this summer, explore, engage in creation, and engage in God in a fresh way.
So is part of the camping guide that a hammock is a far better solution than a sleeping bag because the ground is just hard?
I'm too old for the ground. I travel in a four-wheel drive van now. If you don't
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. All right, friends. The book, again, is We Stood Upon Stars, Finding God in Lost Places. The author is Roger W. Thompson. You can check it all out and get the free camping guide at rogerwthompson.com. Thank you so much for being with us today on The Reconnect.
Well, thank you so much. It was a real pleasure.
All right, friends, it's time to dive below the fold. This is the portion of the show where we try to make a connection with something out there that folks are already talking about. We're trying to enter into a conversation that may already be underway, or introduce a conversation where God doesn't appear on the surface to be the subject matter, but where we're going to try to set the hook. We're anglers. Remember, we're always angling for a way into a conversation. We're fishers of men. This is the adventure, the mission onto which we have been sent. So what's your angle? How are you going to hook somebody into a conversation where you're going to be an authentic ambassador of the kingdom of God, and you're going to be able to introduce those eternal principles that begin to change the way another person thinks and ultimately the way they live? So I told you at the outset of the show that I was going to talk about pie, and I was going to talk about pie at church. Well, I'm going to get to my conversation about pie in church by telling you about a 98-year-old gentleman in Hastings, Nebraska. Now, this guy, I got to tell you, he's an inspiration. He's a pie maker with a purpose. He just started baking 6 years ago after the death of his wife. So this is a story that could have just been a tragedy, and instead is the reclamation of a second half, a second chance, of finishing well, of doing something purposeful with the days that God has given you, and doing something that is sweet and helps people taste and see that the Lord is good. I mean, this is a life's calling that I got to tell you is pretty fantastic. So we're going to talk here about Leo. Now, Leo Kellner is, as I mentioned, 98 years old. He is still in the house that he shared with his wife of 72 years. Her name was Madeline. And it was 6 years ago that Madeline got sick and passed away. So at that point in time, Leo was 92. He was actually not retired at the time. So there you go. I'm going to jump into this PBS a NewsHour story where Dennis Kellogg is saying this. So Dennis Kellogg is a PBS reporter, and he's saying, the doorbell seems to always be ringing here as friends stop by to pick up one of Leo's culinary creations. Leo spends his days in the kitchen gladly baking hundreds of pies and cakes every year. Leo Kellner is 98 years old, Dennis Kellogg says. And then Leo speaks. I gotta do something. I would be dead if I wouldn't be doing this. I lay at night in bed and I think, how can I change things? How can I make things better? I've changed my pie 3 times, the apple one. Dennis, the commentator from PBS, gives us the backstory. Leo grew up through very tough times in the 1930s, watching his mom and his sister bake with whatever ingredients they happened to have, and he spent a lifetime working with irrigation and grain drying businesses. Remember, he's in Hastings, Nebraska. He did not retire until he was 92, when his wife, Madeline, of 72 years, got sick. That is the year she also passed away. Leo picks up the story there in his own words. I started about 4 months or so after my wife died. I was sitting here not knowing what to do with myself. I was used to working. I had given up. I had given up what I was doing. I was kind of just sitting here in the house. And that's when I said to myself, I can bake. Now, I don't know with what inflection he said this. I can bake. I can bake. Think of all the different ways that you could, that the one thing that you could be doing suddenly occurred to you. I could fish. I could paint. I could go talk to my neighbors. So all kinds of things you could do. I can what? I can what? Leo said, I can bake. So that first year, he made 144 apple pies, and he hasn't stopped since. You might think it provides great retirement income, but the thing is, he does not charge a penny. And for those of you who understand how things work in America, it's not a commercial kitchen that he's baking in, so he wouldn't be allowed to charge anything anyway. He gives every one of his pies and cakes away for free to friends, people who are sick, to hospice volunteers, to people attending funerals, to the elderly women and the elderly men who simply cannot afford a good meal on their own. Leo says, you don't know what that means to a person unless you've been poor, like I was years ago. I would have been so tickled if someone had given me a pie. My folks couldn't even give me a pie or a cake for my birthday or something. I lived that life, and that's why I'm happy when I can help somebody put a smile on their face. He's 98, you're saying to yourself. Any day, this good pie story, not just pie in the sky, pie right here on Earth, pie right there in Hastings, Nebraska, this good news story could come to an end every day. Au contraire! Because Leo is actually building a pie-making legacy. He's mentoring a 12-year-old girl named Maddie, teaching her how to bake. Because, as Leo puts it, girls today need to know more than just how to run a computer. Now, he's not saying Maddie doesn't need to know how to run a computer, but he is saying that it would behoove her to know how to bake. And he's the person in the world with the time and the passion to teach her. Maddie says this. He's just like my other grandpa, kinda. When I get older, I want to bake for my friends. I want to teach them how to do it. And even if they don't like it, well, who doesn't like good food anyway? Leo says, I consider her just more than a friend, like part of me. And when I go, I want to take, I can't believe I'm losing it. I want her to take over where I left off. And I think she will. Dennis Kellogg then says, Leo can share his pie recipes with Maddie, but she also has to learn that Leo adds something to his pies and cakes that you can't buy in a grocery store. Leo says this in the walk-off. I make these with a lot of love. I don't just make it to be making it. I make it with love. That's my secret ingredient. So it was a couple of years ago that I was at a church in Indiana. And I was speaking for a portion of the service. And they had 3 services, and the first service was actually pretty early. And during that service, you know, the announcements came and went, and there was frankly nothing in the announcement time that I thought to myself, you know, I as a visitor need to make, you know, serious personal note of that. But the announcements during the second service were completely different. And one of the announcements in the second service was this. if you're a first-time visitor here today, we have a pie for you. So right out there in the hospitality area as you're leaving worship today, if you're a first-time visitor here, we want you to stop by. Miss Sue has made you a pie. She makes these pies every week, and they give away this pie at church. So when I had the opportunity to stand up, I said, people out there in your community don't know there's pie at church. If they did, they'd all be here. People don't know there's pie at church. People think Christians are all these pie-in-the-sky people, that all we're focused on is the hereafter, that all we're, you know, we're just looking to get our ticket stamped to heaven and you know, to heck with everything that's going on here. That's just not true. There's actually pie at church. There is actually a good and gracious and great gospel, and there's actually a household of faith that loves people, and we know how to bake. People, we know how to bake. We ought to be baking. We ought to be giving it away. My mom was like the state fair cherry pie champion in the state of Indiana. I wonder when the last time was she baked a pie for someone else. Mom, if you're listening, Leo is 98. He's baking hundreds of pies and cakes every year, and he's giving them away. What are you doing today? What are you doing today? I will bring you some cherries. You can make a pie. We can give it away. We can start a conversation. You say to yourself, Carmen is talking to old people today. That's exactly right. I'm talking to old people today. Leo's 98. He got his passion and his vision at 92. He's mentoring a 12-year-old. What do you know how to do that you could be doing that you aren't doing because you think you're too old and no one would be interested, or you've bought into the lie of retirement? I love old people who don't see age as particularly relevant to the possibility that God might yet use them in surprising ways. Consider Abraham. Consider Moses. Consider Zechariah and Elizabeth. There's a lot of old people doing a lot of great stuff because they put themselves in the hands of a God who, for whom nothing is impossible. I mean, Donald Trump is kind of an old guy. Joe Biden is kind of an old guy. Bernie Sanders is an old guy. And yet, these guys actually think, you know what? There's stuff I know that can move things in the direction that I think things should be moved in our culture. So whether you're young or whether you're old, what I want you to be is passionate. And I want you to be applying the full force of the life that God has given you into the great adventure of life that he's given you to live. I spoke with a guy named Barry McGuire not that long ago. He's old. And he's applying, I mean, if you've ever waxed your car with any product by Meguiar's, that's who we're talking about. His name's Barry McGuire. He's trying to ignite, and so that's actually what it's called, he's trying to ignite a revival in America. And he's calling for a fresh wind of the Holy Spirit and a move of God's people to actually, you know, bring the gospel to bear on this generation. We have conversations every week with men and women who are past what the world would consider the prime of life, who are changing the world for his glory. Right now, somewhere between Togo, West Africa, and the United States, Bill and Melanie Benefiel, who are my aunt and uncle, so they're old, are returning from 2 years doing mission work in Togo. What are you doing today? You're not too old to make a difference for the kingdom if you put yourself in God's hands. All right, friends, this is The Reconnect, and I'm Carmen LaBurge. Connect with me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up for the podcast, donate to the ministry, share today's show with someone new. Have a great day, and God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.